Devontae with three on the shot clock, tries a deep three, got it again! Oh my! Devontae Graham, 40 in the ball game, and the Hornets lead 111-106.
Former Jayhawk Devontae Graham is absolutely scorching the nets at the NBA level. He had a career high 40 points last night. The Charlotte Hornets, who he plays for, rallied from a 20-point deficit to beat the Nets last night, 113-108. Graham had 27 points in the second half. He hit 7 3-pointers. And here's a crazy number for you. Devontae Graham made history again last night. He joined two other players in NBA history who have made at least 100 3-pointers in 27 games or less to start a season. You want to guess the other two?
I would guess Steph was one of them.
That's one. The other one is a current player as well.
Harden?
Yep, there you go. James Harden, man. Steph Curry, and Devontae Graham, the only three players in NBA history to have 100 threes in 27 games or less to start a season. Graham is lighting up. Right now, he'd be an all-star, and that is something. I didn't think he'd be an all-star at the NBA level. I thought he'd be a decent player, but I never saw this coming. It's awesome. It's fun to watch. He showed those flashes at KU.
Yeah.
He showed those flashes. And sometimes guys are better at the NBA level than college because they just can freelance. And, you know, the old step back three, that's what Graham's got right now. And
he
is absolutely tearing it up right now for the Charlotte Hornets. In other NBA news, Kawhi Leonard returned to Toronto last night to get his ring and get a win, too.
Rebounded by Trez himself, hands it off Williams, and the Clippers are in business offensively. Here's Leonard, open on the right wing, down the right alley. Leonard to the basket, he banks it home, plus the foul. Vintage claw action in Toronto.
Kawhi Leonard with 23 points as he returns as a member of the LA Clippers. Clippers beat the Raptors last night 112-92, and he was he was expecting cheers and boos. And before the game, he was asked, what do you expect? He said, there'll be some cheers, but probably more boos. Instead, he was loved. It sounds like everything went great last night, which I thought that's what would happen. I was kind of surprised he thought he was going to get boos. Of course, remember, he was only in Toronto for 1 year, but won NBA championship. He got lots of boos when he went back to San Antonio, and I think that's why he was thinking he'd probably get some boos there in Toronto. And Kawhi reflected on his time in Toronto getting a ring.
You know, obviously it was different playing here for our whole country. They're all going for this one team. But, you know, the ride was fun. I had a great time last year with the coaching staff, front office, and the players. It was a great experience.
And a great experience last night as well as Kawhi and the Clippers beat the Raptors. But Kawhi gets his ring, and Toronto will be forever grateful for Kawhi for helping them get their first NBA title. Speaking of hoops, our athlete of the week is a hoopster and had a pretty big game the other night.
Yes, Noah Williams, a senior from Rock Hills High School, a Cunningham Telephone and Cable NCSSports.com athlete of the week. Off to a really good start, but like you said, the big night was on Tuesday in the pool play matchup in the Thunderbird Classic. Rock Hills winning 73-56 over Lincoln, and Williams scored 43 points, a career high for him, shooting 17 of 25 from the floor, 6 of 9 from the free throw line, made 3 3-pointers as well. He finished the game with a double-double to top it all off, hauling in 12 rebounds and strong on defense with 4 steals as well. Just an outstanding game inside out overall, all the way around from Noah Williams from Rock Hills. He opened the season on last Friday night with 16 points and 7 boards in the loss to Pike Valley. But again, his 43-point performance against Lincoln on Tuesday night was really what propelled him to the Athlete of the Week. You can read more about him at ncksports.com. If you want to nominate an Athlete of the Week, visit ncksports.com for more on how you can do that. And we'll name an Athlete of the Week each week, and you can nominate an athlete from any school sport. Also in high school hoops coming up today, the Smith Center Redmond and Lady Red are playing in the Amos Morris Classic Consolation Semis at Russell, and they're both playing the host school, Russell. Smith Center girls against Russell at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and the boys play at 4:45. Those games are this afternoon again, and the rest of the games, St. John's Tipton's playing tomorrow at the Morris Stevens. We'll preview all tomorrow's matchup tomorrow on the Sports Ticket. Also, locker room chats coming up tonight on Katy Country 94 for high school basketball, as we'll talk with the head coaches of St. John's Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas around 5:15 this evening. And if you ever miss our locker room chats again, you can go back and listen on the locker room chat podcast at katycountry94.com. So that's all coming up here this evening. Also, there is wrestling tonight in the area. The Bullet Trojans who are now number 4 in the latest Kansas Wrestling Coaches Association rankings, which you can also see at nckssports.com. Boyd coming in and taking on Abilene tonight in a duel. Abilene, a traditional 4A power, coming into town. 6:30 start time for that duel tonight in Beloit for high school wrestling. So that's what's going on here today in the area, and we're looking forward to tonight's high school activities.
Give us the numbers on Williams again, what he did in the game the other night.
43 points, 17 of 25 shooting.
That's pretty good shooting. That's 68%. I can do the math on that.
Yeah, and he made 3 threes. He had 12 rebounds and 4 steals too. 6 of 9 from the free throw line. So
yeah, not bad.
Yeah, he had a decent line.
Decent game.
Coach texted me. He's like, Noah had 43 tonight. Did he just get hot from three? He's like, no, he was just everywhere, like all the way around.
That beats my career high. I had 34. 34 was my career high.
I never touched anything near that.
No, 34.
Not even near 34.
My best game ever was the one game my grandfather attended.
Yeah.
He's still alive. He's 98. But it was the one game we attended. My mom and dad were out of town, and I wasn't any more motivated to play well. It's just the way it worked, playing Hill City, and they played zone, and I was a three-point shooter. I wasn't the guy that was going to drive it and slam it home, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And so I hit 6 threes in the first half at 24 points, and coach said at halftime, Mr. Griffith, Wade, they're going to be all over you the second half. Get ready. And they were. I got some free throws and then another 3, but not much in the second half, and so I just passed the ball to my younger teammate, Jared Brown. He made 4 threes in the second half. We made, like, between him and me, we made 11 threes, and we won the game by like 20 or 30 and played great. We played great that night. Of course, when you make a lot of threes, that helps. And then the next game, I had 33 because I was a ball hog and held onto the ball at the end when we were winning so I could tack on points because I was a good foul shooter. It's the one thing I could do. I could shoot. Otherwise, really nothing. Couldn't play defense that great. Loved zone defenses as an offensive player and as a defensive player. And I was glad I didn't have to bring the ball up the floor, though sometimes I did. But could not jump very well, so needed screens to get open. Did not drive it to the hoop very often, so I was kind of a one-trick pony. But you gave me free throws, and you gave me an open three. I usually could do pretty well, but I always loved that. Not selfishly. I knew it would help my team if I could get the ball, keep the ball, get fouled, make free throws, because I was the best free throw shooter on my team. So I was cool with that. And then, by the way, hey, you had 33. Really? Yeah, you had 12 free throws in the fourth quarter. Oh, yeah, okay. That helps.
The free throw line was my absolute favorite place on the floor.
Oh, yeah. Nobody can block your shot.
Yeah. And
perfect.
People always got mad at me when we'd run, you know, you run more wind sprints if you miss more free throws at the end of practice, and I'd always make most of mine and only have to run like 2 sprints most of the time. And how do you do that? I'm like, well, I don't know. It's just not that hard to me.
Right. Well, you can sit there and be set and have a foundation, have a good form, and nobody can block your shot, and it's always 15 feet away. That helps a little bit.
Get into the routine, do the same thing every time, and you just make them.
Absolutely. No question. So congratulations, Noah Williams. What a performance the other night. And they needed those points because that was a fairly tight game. So that's awesome. Congrats to him on being the Athlete of the Week. And if you have somebody you'd like to nominate for the Athlete of the Week, just let us know. You can go to nckssports.com and contact us one way or the other and send us your nomination. We'll consider it. And sometimes those nominations become the Athletes of the Week. Sometimes they don't, but that's why it's called a nomination. Okay, Kansas State men's basketball last night. Wow, that was a cakewalk. Alabama State is bad. 86-41, K-State wins, 86-41. They set season highs in 11 offensive categories, 29 assists. Kadeh Ajayi had 10 assists in the first half as Xavier Sneed, 8 of 10 from the floor, 4 of 6 from 3. Maybe that'll get him going. He had 20 points. Antonio Gordon and Deshaun Gordon each had 13 points, and Kadeh Ajayi and Stockard had 8, and it's the first 10 assist game since Marcus Foster in 2014 as K-State rolls in the ballgame, 86-41. Bruce Weber on K-State's motivation.
Being humbled a little bit, being a little more coachable, disappointed, frustrated. We said take it out on whoever we're going to play, but maybe just figuring it out slowly but surely. But, you know, we'll see Saturday. We just got to keep making progress.
We talked about the veterans stepping up last night, and, you know, Jada and Sneed and others, and Weber noticed.
Well, the older guys have to be consistent and efficient. And, you know, I thought Xavier got us off to a great start, obviously made some shots, but, you know, sharing the basketball. Cardi, you know, he's got to take pride, and he 10 assists, it's big time. He's one of the best in the country. You know, continue that and doing it at a high clip, because when he drives, he can create for a lot of people. And so, you know, if those guys are efficient, we got to get Matt going a little more. We need him. He can't be floating around. But if those three are consistent, but the big thing with them is they got to demand that why we've won, and they've been part of it, they've been a major part of it, why we've won's got to stay there.
So K-State wins the ball game. They do lose a player, which maybe is okay. He was suspended earlier in the year. Sean Williams is leaving the program. I'm not surprised. I don't think anybody's really surprised too much. He's entering the transfer portal. And Bruce Weber had some interesting comments after the game about Williams leaving Kansas State men's basketball.
When somebody doesn't make it and leaves, it, you know, it's like a child for me. You know, you want everyone to be successful. Not everyone is. Today's world of basketball, guys, you know, they think it's always greener on the other side. And, you know, if they're going to be able to do this or that. I thought he was making some strides, but it wasn't what he wanted. And so we got to move forward. That gives David Sloan, I thought he did a great job, giving him more opportunity. Dej won. And just wish him the best down the road.
Listen, I don't know all the particulars of the situation. And this happens a lot in college basketball. Mm-hmm. It happens more and more all the time. Players that aren't happy with either playing time or don't think they fit the system, don't like the coach after being recruited by the coaching staff. You know, people can draw their own conclusions. Some people are going to say Sean Williams should have stuck it out. He would have been a better player for it. Now he's going to transfer. That's not always a good thing. The grass isn't always greener on the other side, as Bruce Weber alluded to. And I certainly get that. You know, I look at Quentin Grimes, who left Kansas, went to Houston. He's having success in Houston. That was a good move for Quentin Grimes.
Sure.
Because I think there was way too much pressure, and he couldn't handle it at KU. And he just wasn't quite the right fit there at KU. He's gone to Houston and been a great teammate and a good start to the season for Kelvin Sampson. Sometimes the transfers make sense. But there's also something to it when you bring up, what about fighting through adversity? Instead of just giving up and trying to go find the other place that's going to be better, which is there's no guarantee it is going to be better, by the way. I don't know. There's something to be said for that. And I know there's been some players at KU and K-State that had some rough freshman years. And they toughened it out. They stuck it out. And they were rewarded for that. And I just think of so many that just immediately think, well, I'm not playing. I should be playing. I'm a great player. Well, no, you're not a great player. You were great in high school. You come to college, and now you're just a Joe. You were the guy in high school. Now you're just a Joe. And what I mean by that is an average Joe. You're a good player, but you're no better than anybody else on the team. In fact, you might be the 10th best player on the team. Thus, you're probably not going to play much. So instead of whining and complaining about it, what you got to do is work your butt off. Instead of feeling sorry for yourself and thinking the coaches are against you, maybe it's you're the problem. Look in the mirror. Maybe you got to work harder, get better. Maybe everybody else has worked harder than you have, and you thought you were entitled. And that's a problem, and that's a word that's popped up in society today a lot, especially when it relates to sports, is entitled. Well, my kid's a senior. He should play, not the freshman. Is your kid better than the freshman? No? Then shut up. I mean, it's pretty simple. If your kid is a senior but isn't better than a freshman, then you have to, as a senior, instead of whining and asking mom and dad to go to bat for the coach and complaining to the coach or the administration about playing time, maybe you should sit down and talk with your kid and say, what are you doing other than just the 2 hours of practice? Are you working on your game outside of practice? Oh, you're playing video games? Son, daughter, guess what? That's on you. You got to work hard, beat out the freshman. Instead, it's, well, I'm entitled because I've been here 3 years. I should play or I should start. Well, this freshman maybe has played, I don't know, basketball 12 months of the year since he was in third grade. He loves it, and he doesn't play video games. He isn't playing on his phone, Snapchatting, tweeting, Facebooking, Instagramming, whatever you want to call it. And maybe that kid's just better because he's put in the time and the work. Just because you're 18 and another kid's 14 or 15 doesn't mean you're better. And guess what? Let me get you ready for life. Just because you're 29 and somebody's fresh out of college doesn't mean they can't beat you out for a job. Just because you're 38 and you've been in business for 15 years and you've been in the industry and somebody's 25 doesn't mean you're entitled to the job because you're older or you've been in the program longer. No, you're not entitled to jack squat, as Chris Farley would say. What you're entitled to is an opportunity.
Sure.
And it's what you make of that opportunity. So, Sean Williams, I don't know exactly what happened. And I wish him the best of luck, and I hope he finds the right spot so that he can play. But I think there is something to be said of guys that stick it out and get rewarded for it. And there's been many examples of that, but there are also examples where it's just not the right fit, and you tried, you know, and only Sean Williams can answer the question, did you really try to make it work?
Sure.
And if he did, and he's transferring, power to him. But if deep down he knows he didn't, then he probably shouldn't be leaving.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I get that part of it too, but, you know, as a fan of a program, whether he feels like he did everything or not to be in the program, if he doesn't want to be here, I don't want him here. I want people that are all into the program. And if there's any kind of
let me stop you for just a quick second. I'll let you extend upon that point. But I would say that there are a lot of people that come in that aren't all in, but they eventually learn to be all in. So
sure.
So if you immediately say, well, he's not all in right off the bat, I don't want part of the
but
program.
But I'm talking about guys that have been here. You know,
that were bought in and then bought out? Is that what you're saying?
Basically, I'm talking about you can't ever know if you're all in until you get there, to be
right.
Completely honest, until you get under the coach and have him coach you. What I'm saying is a guy that's been here 2 years,
mm-hmm.
if he's not bought in yet,
yeah.
If he doesn't want to be here, if he's not all in to the program,
right.
To the university, then it's best to move on.
I agree with
whether
that.
Whether I feel like he fought through everything and tried to get better,
right.
And tried to get to where he could buy in and be all in, if he's not there after the first year and after 2 years and is having thoughts of leaving, I really don't want that kind of guy in my program because I think it kind of tears down the other – it might tear down the other guys. It might be a bad thing for the locker room if he's not bought in and doing what everybody else has agreed upon, is basically what I'm saying.
I totally get your point. I do. But Skylar Thompson had thoughts of leaving, and that worked out. Because he had thoughts of leaving, and so he wasn't maybe all in. Is he not all in because he thought about leaving? I guess that's up to the person to make that connection. You could argue that. And so then, you know, if that is the case, Skylar Thompson found a way to be all in. Okay?
He got a new coach.
Well, I know that. But
I feel like he probably would have left.
He could have left before last year, before Bill Snyder.
Sure.
Things weren't exactly hunky-dory either.
Yeah.
He could have left before Bill Snyder's last year. So, I mean, you can leave right after a freshman year, as we've seen with a lot of guys. I'm with you. If you're a cancer and you're a negative person and you're not all in, I get that leaving, but at the same time I think there's many examples of guys that haven't been all in that eventually buy in because either a teammate takes them under their wing, an assistant coach does, or the head coach, whether the kid earns the opportunity, he finally decides to work hard for a week, he gets that opportunity, he says, oh, see, my hard work's paying off now. He starts to buy all in. So I just want to make sure that we don't immediately say, well, because the kid's not all in, he's immediately out, because I think that happens a lot. I would bet you 75 or more percent of freshmen that go to college in any sport, do you think they're all in after the first practice?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
After the first practice, they're like, oh, my God, this is hard. I am dead. Is this how every practice is going to be? And you're not all in because you don't understand the animal. But I do get your point. Sean Williams has been there for a while, he should understand the animal. But only Sean Williams can answer the question, was I ever all in? Was I ever all in? And if I was I really, really all in regards to my effort and my work ethic? Or did I think I was entitled because I'm Sean Williams? And I cannot answer that question.
And that's all I'm saying is, you know, guys have been in the program, and if they have those thoughts of leaving and they're not there to be a teammate, to be part of what's going on, I just don't feel like it's not hurting. It's not hurting any more than it's helping for them to be there. And if you're hurting anything as far as the projection of how you're going to go on with the program and keeping this guy around, and he doesn't want to be here. And, you know, those are the kind of guys that it doesn't bother me if they leave, basically, is what I'm saying, because I think it's probably better for everybody to move on from that.
Sure. This was sent to me, the recruiting classes here last few years for Kansas State. 2016, Xavier Sneed, Cartier Jada, they're starters. James Love, who is always hurt.
He's always hurt, yeah.
Brian Patrick, he transferred. So that's still not a bad class, though. You got two starters there.
Yeah.
2017, Levi Stockard. I would agree with this opinion. He's not really a Power 5 player, although he's getting a little bit better, but he's just a bit player. He's not a regular player. Nigel Shad, he's always hurt, never plays. Mike McGurl's a starter, but probably should be a role player. I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. So that's not a great class at all. 2018, all three of the top recruits all transferred already. Good news, which I don't think he was much
he
of a player.
He was never
anyway.
Really there. I mean, he was kind of there for a semester, then left.
I wouldn't even count that one. No. Austin Trice, who there was big hopes for him. He transferred after 1 year. And Sean Williams now has transferred. So when you combine 2016, 17, 18, the recruiting classes of Bruce Weber, and that was always a concern when Bruce Weber was hired. Can he recruit? Of course, you have to say you had Kamau Stokes, you had Barry Brown and Dean Wade. That was a pretty decent class. So let's not exclude that one. Yeah. You know, it's convenient to make your argument. You go back the last 3 years.
Antonio Gordon's starting right now. He's in class of 2019.
I think their class this year and next year are better than
I think
the
that's the reason some of these guys are leaving is because they see what's coming up.
Right. And they can't
K-State sees we need an open scholarship, too. So, Sean, they could have talked to Sean Williams and said, hey, you're probably not going to be much of the future here.
If you're not all in.
If you're not bought in, we need a scholarship.
Yeah.
And they have a scholarship now.
They do, yeah. Yep. Interesting. Always is when somebody leaves a program. We've seen it, KU, K-State, Oklahoma, Nebraska. It happens everywhere. And it happens a lot more often.
And you also can't just count the freshmen, too. Like, McCall Maywein's not he wasn't a part of one of those type of classes.
Right.
He was a transfer from JUCO.
Right.
And David Sloan's a transfer.
Right.
You know,
that's still part of recruiting. You got to pull those kids
in. Yeah, you got to count that, not just the freshmen.
I know, it's a convenient,
that
was a convenient argument.
Yeah.
No doubt. People swing things the way they want. That's why
but,
I mean,
it's a good point.
I'm sure
that all three of the guys from 18 are now no longer with the team.
Sure.
But... And Austin Trice was a JUCO transfer, wasn't he? So he was part of what?
Yeah, yeah.
But none of the other ones. Like, what?
Not really a complete list there. Yeah, but anyway, I think K-State's doing better on the recruiting trail. But, you know, you look at some of those classes, you thought they weren't bad, and then these kids are gone.
Their rankings look pretty good right now for the upcoming two classes, but you never know who's going to come
rankings,
in and do anything.
Rankings, schmankings.
It doesn't mean anything.
I don't care about rankings.
I know.
I honestly,
that's what I'm saying.
Know
it's like, you know, we wait and see what they do when they come, and you find out.
Great for Rivals and ESPN to rank everybody. I can rank them, too. I mean, you can, too, and we might be just about as accurate. I mean, it's these people don't see all the film. They don't see the film of the kid having the bad game.
No.
They see the highlights. That's what I mean. You know, the athleticism, it's all based on potential. And the rankings are one of the biggest ruses in sports, these rankings, because they mean nothing. The fans get all excited about, we got a 5-star, we got a 4-star. I mean, there's lots of 2 and 3 stars that have turned out to be pretty good. I led the program with Devontae Graham. He was a transfer at Appalachian State.
Yeah.
He was not a 5-star, a 4-star, even a 3-star, people. He turned out pretty good. Colin Klein was a 2-star. I always use the example. Dane Crist was a 5-star. How'd that turn out?
Yeah.
So the rankings are just
like
ridiculous.
I can guarantee you.
We've got a great recruiting class. K-State's got a top 3 class in the Big 12. That's great. But let's actually rank it when they've done playing.
Yeah.
That's when you should rank the classes.
That's right. The rankings wouldn't have told you that Jacob Pullen was going to be the all-time leading scorer at K-State. I can promise you that.
Nope. Rankings wouldn't have told you Colin Klein would be a finalist for the Heisman.
No.
Nope. So I don't get caught up in the rankings at all. In fact, I saw something released yesterday. K-State got a commitment. The Pritchard kid, is that football, I think?
Yeah.
He's a top-rated kid in Kansas.
2021.
I'm like, that's 2 years from now.
So far out from now that I don't even – I'm not reporting on it. I don't care
about
it.
I'm not either. I'm not either. I'm like,
a K-State fan.
First
it's like,
of all
– until they get on campus, I don't really care about recruiting.
Exactly. That's the key point, until they get on campus. Cause
for football especially.
First of all, that kid can change his mind. He's got plenty of time to change his mind. Until he signs the actual letter of intent, okay, I'm not going to go, gaga and cocoa for Cocoa Puffs. I mean, for crying out loud. And the other thing is, we see this all the time, guys, they have the oral commitments, the verbal commitments, and then they back out. KU's we talked about when KU was bragging about all these kids that verbally committed. Guess what? They've had a handful that have decommitted.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. And so, K-State's got this... And it's a top-ranked kid in the state, and somebody said, I thought this other kid was a top-ranked team kid in the state in football. Well, yeah, one ranking service has him number one, the other one has him number two or three. Well, then it's not as good of a get as we think. So then we promote it from this angle. If you're pushing it for K-State, well, he's a number one recruit in Kansas. But if you're pushing it for, let's say, K-State writes about it about KU, they're going to say he's the third-ranked recruit in Kansas. who knows? I mean, just because you're top recruit in Kansas doesn't mean you're going to be good. Doesn't mean you're going to be good at all. You might get to college and like the party, and next thing you know, you're kicked off the team, you're suspended, you transfer because, hey, I can't make it, or you like the girls, whatever case may happen, and or you lose your love for the game, or you get hurt, or mentally it's too much for you to deal with, you can't balance your studies, you can't stay eligible. There's all kinds of things that happen that you don't have to deal with when you're in high school. And I just think the rankings are the biggest sham of all.
Yes.
I mean, it's just...
Agreed.
Alabama's looking at the kid. Whoa, went from 2-star to 4-star. Woo! How'd the kid change? Oh, he didn't. Alabama's looking at him. Well, then he must be a 4-star.
Yeah.
Whatever. I just think it's a joke. I mean, great for those companies that are making all the money off of those recruiting services and the rankings. Great for them. That's America. Good for them. People want to buy it. I haven't spent a penny on any of that stuff. And I won't. I'll wait and actually let the kids get here and see what they do. Right.
Yeah. There's and even guys that sign their letters. There's too many of those guys that don't even end up on campus even after they sign a letter.
Exactly.
You know, I wait until they're there in August for K-State football, and then I'll start getting excited about what they might be.
What were the rankings of Dean Wade, Barry Brown, and Kamau Stokes at K-State? Their star ratings, you know?
Probably 3 for Barry and Kamau, and Dean was 3, I think.
Yeah. Okay. They're 3 stars. That doesn't blow you away.
No.
They're not 4 or 5-star athletes.
No.
They led K-State to an Elite Eight.
Yeah.
And they had a pretty good run. Big 12 championship last year.
I think Kamau was the highest rated out of high school.
So do you really want a whole bunch of 4 or 5 stars after the fact when you know these 3 stars did all that? You don't care if they were 3 stars, if they actually end up being good.
No.
You only care about the ratings before they even get on campus, as Dusty accurately pointed out. Okay, we turn to football. The Chiefs and the Broncos, 11 a.m. pregame this Sunday, kickoff at noon from Arrowhead. Chiefs will face Drew Locke. And I said it to Dani Welniak, if you missed our interview with her, she's a sports director at KCTV5 in Kansas City, does a wonderful job. And she was on the show yesterday, and I was telling her that on draft day, I thought Drew Locke could be a very good quarterback in this league. I'd seen him play at Missouri, and then I thought he didn't have a lot around him his last year, put up some really good numbers, and I thought this is a guy that can play in the NFL. And when he kept sliding in the draft, I kept hoping that nobody in the division would get Drew Locke. And when I watched the draft and followed it, I was worried that the Chargers were going to get Drew Locke because the Rivers, there's no heir apparent to him. And I thought the Chargers, And then the Broncos were on the clock, and they passed on Drew Locke, I think the first pick they had. And I was like, okay, good, they passed on Drew Locke. Well, then Locke slid far enough, and the Broncos had another shot, and they grabbed Drew Locke. I think Drew Locke is going to be a good quarterback in this league. I don't know if he's going to be a superstar, but I think he has the moxie. I think he has the makeup. And I think, you know, he's off to a great start, obviously, with the Broncos. Now, what happens against the Chiefs, who knows? But I was a little bit concerned when Drew Locke was drafted by the Broncos because I'm like, dagnabbit, that could be a kid that turns out to be pretty good. And that obviously elevates the Broncos into competing with the Chiefs. I like when the Broncos aren't good. I'm a Chiefs fan. I like when the Broncos stink. All right?
Yes.
I love it when the Raiders are no good. I love it when Philip Rivers is throwing interception after interception and plays till he's 45, which right now he's 38. If he wants to keep playing, the Chargers want to put him out there, that's awesome.
Cool with it.
Fine with me, man. Fine with me. Drew Locke's going to come to Arrowhead. He had a great start against the Texans. There is a little bit more film on Locke at the NFL level. If there's anybody that knows Drew Locke, it's Andy Reid because Drew Locke's dad, Andy Reid, coached in college. So Dani Welniak told us that yesterday on the show. If you missed that interview, it's on a podcast center there at Sports Ticket on KDCountry94.com. And Drew Locke talks about playing against his hometown team, the Chiefs.
It's a cool thought, you know, especially that, you know, you went to Mizzou and you stayed at home during college, too. And this is my first time out. And then going to a team in the division, I think that's pretty cool to be able to have the opportunity just to go home and play against the Chiefs and, you know, be in front of some of your friends and family.
The Chiefs defense has been playing a lot better lately. Drew Locke acknowledges that.
I think how versatile they are on defense and how well they hide coverages, you know, especially to a new guy. You know, you can't help but feel like they're going to heat you up and disguise everything and try to bring some exotic stuff. So just trying to be dialed in on the film, being super locked in, no distractions kind of deal to where, you know, you can go in and have a pretty clear mind about what's going on.
Broncos come to town. They're feeling pretty good about themselves. They can play spoiler to the Chiefs. This could be a trap game. Chiefs emotional great win at Foxborough against the Patriots. Turn around and remember the Chiefs, 3 of their 4 losses are at home, albeit against pretty good teams. Well, at the time, the Colts, who are not good anymore. The Texans, who the Broncos just spanked. And their other loss at home was against Green Bay when Mahomes was out and hurt. Speaking of Mahomes, he's the old quarterback in this matchup. Actually, I think age-wise they're pretty almost close to identical. I don't know exactly how old Locke is, but I will tell you that Mahomes is the savvy veteran now compared to Locke, second year as a starter. And for Mahomes, he just hasn't been 100% all year. You know, I go back to that first game of the year, and we talked about it with Danny Welniak yesterday. The Chiefs' offense, like the first half against Jacksonville, they just looked awesome. It just looked like, here we go. We just picked up where we left off. And then Mahomes hurt his ankle. And the offense has not been the same ever since.
Not really.
You know, I mean, and Sammy Watkins had a big day. He's not been the same ever since.
Oh, that's the thing. I see Sammy Watkins out there just running routes, not catching passes. I'm like, what happened to week one Sammy Watkins?
Uh-huh.
Like, where's that at?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, just to change gears a little bit in mid-transition, Sammy Watkins will not be on this team next year. And I thought that even after his big game week one. He's not going to be part of this team. He costs too much money, salary cap reasons. He'll be gone, especially after what's he done so far this year, even after a great week one performance. You got, I think Mecole Hardman's going to slide in his slot. And then you got Hardman and Hill in the wide receiving core at the same time, along with Kelsey. And then you sprinkle in DeMarcus Robinson. Maybe they get somebody in the draft. I mean, Pringle, I think, could be still a good, you know, a possession receiver. He's done okay when he's been given the opportunity. So I think she's a pretty good wide receiver, even if they let go of Sammy Watkins, and it would help them financially. And then they could maybe go address their offensive line, especially maybe at center. I've seen a lot of talk on message boards yesterday. The Chiefs in the draft need to get a guard/center, maybe early in the draft. You get a guy like Quentin Nelson for the Colts, who's a stud at guard. Yeah, that'd be awesome. You get Willie Roaf in the draft, or Will Shields. Remember those guys that made the big holes for Priest Holmes and Larry Johnson? Yeah. And then that helps protect your quarterback. I'm all for it. I have no problem with the Chiefs addressing the offensive line. I know it's not sexy, but you've got a guy that you're going to give probably $40 million or more per year to an extension here pretty soon in Patrick Mahomes. You got to protect that investment. And I think, you know, I think the Chiefs, running back-wise, I don't know what they're going to do in the offseason. They might try to get somebody. I think Darwin Thompson can be a good maybe third-down scat back. LeSean McCoy's on the back end of his career, as we know. He might not even be with the Chiefs next year. Damian Williams, you know, he's been kind of injury prone. I think the Chiefs could definitely address the running back position, and I think they do need to find a second tight end better than what they got right now. It would be something to address, whether it's a free agent in the offseason or whether it's a guy they draft. But I think if you look at the Chiefs and their needs in the offseason, you know, a corner would be okay. If you got a good young corner, I think that'd be awesome. You're set at safety. And then a linebacker, a run-stuffing linebacker that's athletic to cover would be great. I think that'd be one of the top things I'd want. But I do think a center or a guy that can play guard or center that can find a stud, and if he's available in the first round, I'm not against the Chiefs drafting offensive lineman in the first round next year.
No.
I know the fan base doesn't get super excited about it, but I mean, if that guy ends up being a 10-year veteran that protects the quarterback who's going to be the quarterback for 10 years, God willing, doesn't get hurt, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm still always a proponent of whoever's number one on your board, no matter the position in the first round.
Take the best available.
If you got a team like the Chiefs, where there's not this just glaring need everywhere.
Right.
You know, there's not like two or three positions that you absolutely have to have.
Yeah.
I like the whole if a center's number one on my board, boom, that's perfect. I'll take him, and it fits a need that I think I have too. And
yeah, number one on your board when it gets to your pick.
To your pick, yeah.
Saying, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, obviously. If they're number one on your board and they're
you're
gone
the second
on the
overall
number one pick,
you're probably not taking the center.
You can't take them.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Then you take the next available player. I'm with you. Totally agree with you. So Mahomes, as we talked about, he injured the ankle in week one against Jacksonville and a dislocated kneecap against Denver in Denver. Missed a couple games. And he had his ankle stepped on multiple times before that happened. And now it seemed like he was doing all right, although I think he's a little bit concerned about taking some hits with that brace on that knee. I think that's why he backpedals a lot. That and Austin Ryder and the interior of the offensive line hasn't done a great job in protecting him with pressure up the middle. I think the tackles have done fine. Eric Fisher, certainly an improvement over Cam Irving. Let's hope Fisher doesn't get hurt. Or Schwartz, by the way. Those two tackles, they can't afford to have an injury there the rest of the way. But he injured his hand, did Patrick Mahomes, and Mahomes talked about his hand and said it's feeling better.
It's doing better. I mean, a lot of the swellings went out in these last 2 days, and so I was able to throw the football around today, and I'm excited to go out and practice and be able to spin it around there. But definitely it was a little scary after the game when it was a little bit the bruised and the swelling and stuff like that. But as we've kind of done more and more treatment, the swellings went away, so I was able to throw the football and everything.
Okay, good deal. Sounds like he'll be all right. Let's hope that he can heal up. If he could get back to 100%, which I don't know if he'll ever be that with that brace on his knee and everything, but anything close, that would make a big difference in this offense, no doubt about it. Andy Reid, his defense has improved. The offense needs to improve a little bit, certainly, putting up touchdown step field goals or closing out games, and Reed realizes there's more work to be done.
We know the season's not over. I mean, this is, we've still got the remaining of the season to go here that we've got to take care of, and Denver's playing good football right now. The Lock kid is playing well at the quarterback spot, so these are short-lived, and we understand it's plenty of season left, so we got to really bear down the stretch here.
Well, here's the good news. The game is going to be at home for the Chiefs, and you may say that's bad news because I just stated that three of the four losses for the Chiefs have been at home. But the good news, the silver lining is, I think the Chiefs will get the equipment to Arrowhead in plenty of time. We didn't even talk about this, but it was a crazy story that broke a few hours before the Patriot-Chiefs game. If you don't know about it, there's a new twist to this story after the fact. I don't know if Dusty's heard this either. When the Chiefs' equipment went missing before their game against New England on Sunday, it was a lot bigger deal than most people thought, and that's because the Chiefs would have been required to forfeit to the Patriots if the equipment didn't show up before the game's kickoff. That's right. The Chiefs would have to forfeit a game against the Patriots. Can you imagine? Now, there are Chiefs people saying, fans, oh, the Patriots, they stole our equipment, they cheated. No, it was an honest mistake. What happened was the Chiefs had it on the plane, but they couldn't store it anywhere because there was high school teams using the facilities at Foxborough. So apparently the stuff stayed on the plane, but then the plane went to New Jersey with the equipment on it. 35 players' helmets and shoulder pads. That's 35 of your game day 53. So you can do the math. You wouldn't have a lot of players left and so forth and so on. So guess what the Chiefs, you obviously have to put together some kind of backup emergency plan if you don't get the equipment there in time, because you don't want to forfeit, obviously. So what happened? Well, after their equipment was 225 miles away on an airport tarmac in Newark, New Jersey, and since there was no guarantee that the equipment was going to make it back to Gillette Stadium on time, the Chiefs came up with a contingency plan, and the contingency plan was to borrow helmets from a local high school team. It wasn't an ideal plan, but for the Chiefs, it was better than forfeiting. Once the plan was hatched, Masco Nemet, if I'm pronouncing it right, Regional High School Athletic Director John Delinas got a mysterious call from a representative of the Riddell Helmet Company on Sunday asking for an interesting favor. He's told me, I really don't have too much time to talk, but a bunch of the Chiefs' helmets and shoulder pads or other equipment are in Newark, New Jersey right now. There's a big snafu. I need to get down to Masco. If it's possible, could we use your helmets for the game? Why would the Chiefs want to talk to this team from Masco? There's a really good reason why they wanted to borrow the helmets from Masco. That's because the school's logo is eerily similar to the Chiefs. If the Chiefs had been forced to wear the Masco helmets, it wouldn't have been completely noticeable to viewers at home. Both teams wear a red helmet with an Arrowhead decal. But Kansas City's Arrowhead has a KC in the middle, and Masco has an M. And I have to admit, when I see the picture from afar here, it looks like the Chiefs' helmet.
Yeah.
You zoom in, you see the M instead of a KC. That would have been a pretty good fit in regards to the color scheme.
Just say we've changed our name to the right. Mahomeses.
The Mahomeses, yes, I like that. Mahomies.
We're the Mahomies.
We're the Mahomies. Yeah. Yeah, right. That's his charitable foundation, the Mahomies. So now the weird thing is that the athletic director pointed out and the activities association director said there, we don't know how those helmets would have fit the players.
Yeah.
You know, what would have happened, I don't know. Thank goodness it didn't come to that. But the Chiefs had to have some kind of contingency plan, and that was to borrow high school football helmets. Can you believe that? Wow.
I don't know if, like, the NFL has this, like, one helmet rule, though, that because, like, teams can't wear throwback helmets. They have to put the old logos on the same helmet they're wearing.
Right.
So I don't know how that would have worked. Like, would they have been able to...
Well, apparently it would have worked.
Let them play.
They wouldn't have done that if they didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't think, but then why can't other teams have more than one helmet if you're going to let them do that? You know what I'm saying?
I think this would be an extenuating circumstance.
It would, yeah.
I don't think the NFL wants a team forfeiting a primetime game at 3:25 on CBS, so I think they'd cut them a break.
Yeah.
Because that means less money for the NFL.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. You'd have to refund all the ticket brokers, ticket people. Yeah.
I get all that. But if I'm a team that wants to wear throwback helmets, it's like, well.
Yeah. Well, that's not an extenuating circumstance. You got your other helmets. They're right here.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't crazy enough to be like the Chiefs and lose your helmets and pads to Newark, New Jersey. All right, Thursday night football tonight, the Ravens will try to keep a firm hold of that number one seed. You know, if the Chiefs want to get a number one seed, they need to hope for upsets. This would be one tonight. Lamar Jackson is banged up. He has a quad injury, but he's listed as questionable, but he says he's going to be fine. He's going to give it a go. Jets at the Ravens tonight. Jets have been kind of Jekyll and Hyde. Some games they look really good. Some games they look horrible. The Ravens 11-2, the Jets 5-8. Thursday Night Football tonight on NFL Network at 7:20. So if you're a Chiefs fan holding out hope to get that number one seed and home field advantage, then you better be really pulling for the Jets or really, really rooting against the Baltimore Ravens. The NFL playoff picture as it sits today. If the playoffs started today, in the AFC, the Ravens would be the number one seed and have home field throughout the playoffs. The Patriots would be the two seed and get a first round bye. The Chiefs would be the three seed, and they would host the six seed, the Steelers, in the first round of the playoffs on Wild Card Weekend. Texans would be the four seed. They'd host the Bills, the five seed. And right now on the outside looking in, the Titans with an 8-5 record are the seven seed. But if they would beat Houston, coming up, I believe they play this week. Yes, they do. Two of the last 3 weeks they play each other. So if Tennessee beats Houston, Tennessee would slide into the four spot and Houston would fall out of the playoff race. But then they'll play again the final week of the season and that could change it again. Really, nobody else in AFC has a legitimate chance. Technically, the Broncos are still alive mathematically at 5-8. Colts are 6-7, Raiders 6-7, Browns 6-7, but it doesn't look too promising for those teams to make the playoffs. It sounds like and looks like there are seven teams vying for six spots, and really, honestly, you've only got two teams vying for one, and that's the Texans and the Titans. The Bills are in really good shape unless they collapse. I guess the Titans can beat out the Steelers for a wild card. You could have the Texans and Titans both make it. So you look at the Ravens, the Patriots, the Chiefs of all. The Patriots haven't clinched the playoff spot yet. That's not official.
No.
The Bills could still win that division, and if that happened, then that means the Patriots could be at Arrowhead in the first round of the playoffs if the Chiefs slide to a four seed. So keep that in mind. The NFC, the Niners are number one seed, but that can change. If they lose to Seattle and Seattle later in the year and both teams went out, until that point, the Seahawks would be the number one seed. Niners are number one seed right now. They have home field in the NFC. The Packers right now would be the number two seed. That's because the Saints lost to the 49ers. The Saints would be the three seed. They would host the Vikings. That'd be a heck of a matchup. The Vikings are the six seed right now. The five seed Seattle, even though a 10-3 record, would have to go to the 6-7 Cowboys. Dallas would be the four seed, higher seed, despite a much worse record. The Rams are 8-5, and they are trying to find their way into the playoffs. And I don't know. I think the Rams could, by the end of the year, be one of the better teams in the league, and I don't know if they're going to get in.
Yeah.
Because they got to catch the Vikings, although the Vikings and Packers got to play one more time. And there's no guarantee the Packers get – the Packers could lose that game of Vikings, and the Vikings could win the division. The Vikings could get all the way up to a two seed and have a home field – have a bye and have home field – for the first round or possibly two, or the Vikings should be out of the playoffs altogether.
Yeah, it's some tight spots there in the NFC.
The NFC is a much better conference.
I mean, you see a team jump from number five to number one. Of course, that's based on top four get the, you know, division winners get the top four spots, but the 49ers jump all the way to number one last week with one win.
Right.
So, you know,
the Rams are 8-5, the Bears are 7-6, and both are screaming, why aren't we in the NFC East? And the Eagles have a better chance. Eagles have a better chance of making playoffs than the Rams or the Bears, despite having a much worse record, because they just went out and they're in the playoffs. They can go 9-7. They don't have a tough schedule other than, I wouldn't say it's tough either. They got to beat the Cowboys head to head. And we know the Cowboys are struggling. The Cowboys haven't beaten a team with a winning record all year long. And the Cowboys play the Rams this week. I would say that's an L for the Cowboys. So the Eagles, I think, are in good shape as long as they beat Dallas head-to-head, which that might end up being 9-6. I don't know what. Both offenses have been struggling. They'll put up some yards, but they don't score points. So it's a shame that the Bears or the Rams or maybe even the Vikings would be left out of the playoffs. And a team with a 8-8, 9-7 record, and that's assuming we could get the Cowboys-Eagles to that record. Could even be 7-9.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, they have a home field game. They'd have a first-round game at home because they won their division. It does seem unfair, but as we talked about, life is not fair. Okay. We end with golf. The President's Cup is taking place, and all the predictions were the Americans were going to crush them. Going to roll. Clearly have the better team. You know how many times I've heard that, even with the Ryder Cup, and it usually doesn't go well? Well. Yesterday was not a good day. Tiger Woods did a great job, but USA lost the remaining four matches against the international team on the first day of the 13th President's Cup. For the first time since 2005, the Americans trail after the first session. It's a huge boost for the international side, which has lost the last seven President's Cups. Everybody lost yesterday for USA except for Tiger Woods. Now, Tiger was with a partner. They paired up. I don't have all the information here. Yes, him and partner Justin Thomas won a four-ball match, best ball, and that was the only match won by the USA. So hopefully day two goes a little bit better. The USA is going to lose the President's Cup, and where they're a heavy, heavy favorite. Well. Lots of money being divvied out in Major League Baseball. If you didn't hear yesterday, Gerrit Cole agreeing to a 9-year, $324 million deal with the Yankees. And now the Yankees are trying to get one of his favorite catchers to team up with him. Why not? You spent $324 million. Might as well get the catcher he wants. And it's reported that Anthony Rendon is going to sign a 7-year, $245 million deal. He was outstanding for the Nationals this year. Sounds like he's going to go to the L.A. Angels. So the Angels, once again, they add the offense, but they can't get the pitching.
So funny, we were talking about the Angels and all the failed long-term deals that they've signed, and then the next day, let's get Rendon 7 for $245. Let's see how that one works out.
So Strasburg got 7 for $245, 7 for $245 Rendon, but Rendon leaves the Nationals for the Angels, and Strasburg stays with the Nationals. And by the way, on the Gerrit Cole contract, there is an opt-out after his fifth year for him. It's a player option opt, and there's a no-trade clause. So if the Yankees want to get rid of him 3 years and he's struggling, he can say, nope.
Give me my money.
So you gave him the money and all the control as well. And if he's doing great after 5 years, you gave him the option to get out, which I think he'd probably stay in at the age of 34. But
kind of contract, I don't know that you could get much better than that when you get 5 years added to it here.
Safe to say the Yankees really wanted Gerrit Cole and they made it happen.
Yeah.
Good for them, they made it happen. They have the resources. I've always said, if you got the resources, go do it. If that's the guy, if he's number one on your list, whether it's a free agent, number one in your draft, in NFL, whatever it may be, if that's the number one guy you target, you want, and you have the resources and the money to get him, then you should go get him. Especially if you're the Yankees and a major market team, because if that contract blows up in your face, it's not nearly as big a hit as it is to small and mid-market teams. Now, here's an interesting report. The Mets have agreed to terms with Rick Porcello. Now, you may say, what's the big deal here? Rick Porcello won a Cy Young, and he pitched for, he was at Boston recently, but he was with the Tigers, too, before that. But he won a Cy Young. He didn't have a great year last year, but he's a guy young enough to certainly correct things and fix it. And there was a rumor out there that the Royals would be a perfect fit for Rick Porcello because the Royals maybe need some starting pitching. Not maybe, they do. And that'd be a guy that the Royals usually get guys off the bargain heap and they try to reconstruct their careers. I mean, you can see lots of pitchers over, Irvin Santana, Edison Volquez, Chris Young, many others. And it was affordable. Rick Porcello, 1 year, $10 million. But the Royals apparently either didn't have interest or didn't want to pay that much to Rick Porcello. And Porcello, as a result, is going to be a New York Met on a one-year deal. There's not a lot of risk there. That sounds like a perfect deal for the Royals. But their new ownership, the Royals, Dayton Moore said the other day that it's projected their payroll to be $75 to $80 million, which is significantly down from the last couple of years, which makes sense because Kennedy comes off the books. Gordon's off the books. They do have enough money to bring Gordon back if Gordon wants to come back, but it'll be, of course, at a much lower price, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
But Porcello would have been a guy. He's 30, which is not old.
31 and in about 2 weeks.
Okay, well, that's okay. Now. 31. Yeah. He's been pretty durable. And last year with Boston, his ERA was 5.52, 14 and 12. He had some offense behind him.
I looked at that ERA. I'm like, the Royals have a guy with an ERA of 5.52. He's not winning 14 games, that's for sure.
No. In 2016, he was the Cy Young Award winner with 22 wins. And then in 17, ERA of 4.5, he was 11 and 17. And then 2 years ago, 17 and 7, ERA of 4.28. ERA ain't great, but he had good offense. And then last year, 14 and 12, 5.52 ERA. You have a 5.52 ERA with the Royals. Your record is 4 and 16.
Yeah.
So, maybe now I look at his numbers. Maybe that wouldn't be the greatest fit. Although I will say, at Fenway, that's a home run hitter's park. You go to Kauffman, that'll help you.
City Field's going to help him out, too. That's not a
right.
In New York, that's not a place where people are hitting home runs all the time.
And that's where he needed to go, somewhere where, it's not a home run park. And, obviously Kauffman would have been that, too. So I can sit here and say that maybe it wouldn't be a great fit because the Royals don't have a lot of offense, and the Red Sox did, and that's why he won a lot of games with the ERA that was fairly, it was in the fours to even the fives, except for a Cy Young Award winning year. But I also could counter that argument and say, but his ERA will get better. He won't give up as many home runs because he'll be a Kauffman. He gave up 38 home runs back in 2017, 31 homers last year. He's a fly ball pitcher. If you're a fly ball pitcher, you don't want to be in a bandbox. You need to go to a bigger park, and that's what he's going to do. Some rumors out there that the Padres are interested in trading for Whit Merrifield. One of the guys that they would entertain trading to the Royals is Will Myers, who the Royals traded way back for the deal for James Shields and Wade Davis, and Myers has a hefty contract. Do you really think the Royals are going to take on Will Myers, who isn't a great player anymore?
No.
And he's a liability defensively, and they're going to take on a whole bunch of money? I love when people nationally just throw out names just to try to mix and match stuff. It's like, think about this. Just because the Royals aren't very good right now, and maybe you can say they were tanking, although I don't think they were, that doesn't mean they're just going to take on bad contracts. Come on, man. You think they're going to trade their best player for a bad contract when Witt's under control for three more years?
No.
Hello? Some of these reports just don't make sense. So
I'm fairly confident Witt's not going anywhere this year.
I'm pretty confident about that as well. It'd be a bad start for the new ownership group when John Sherman, if you trade away your best player for peanuts.
Yeah.
That would not look good. Suddenly, you'd be compared to David Glass back in the early days when he was tight and wouldn't spend any money and traded away his best players and drafted guys not on athletic ability or potential, but on signability. And Allard Baird, I still to this day feel sorry for the guy that he had to be the GM of the Royals because that was a guy that was, he had a toothpick going into a gunfight.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.